Chapter 7 The Last Ride. It was about midday when Ethan got home. Zena was by the fire, with a scarf on her head and a book about stomach pains in her hand. She did not move or look up. "Where's Maddie?" Ethan asked. Zena continued to read her book.
"I guess she's packing her case," she replied.
Ethan went straight upstairs. Maddie's door was closed. "Matt," he said in a low voice. There was no answer, so he gently pushed open the door. Maddie was sitting on her case in her best dress, with her back to the door and her face in her hands. She was crying. Ethan put his hands on her shoulders.
"Matt, oh, don't. Oh, Matt."
"Ethan, I thought you weren't coming back," she cried, lifting her wet face to his.
He took her in his arms and kissed her soft hair. Then they heard Zena calling and moved away from each other. He carried her suitcase downstairs, and with every tick of the clock, the pain in his heart grew. At dinner, he could eat nothing. After the meal, Zena sat down by the fire, and Maddie began to wash the dishes. Jotham got up from the table and asked Ethan,
"So what time will I come round for Maddie?"
"You needn't come round. I'm going to drive her over myself," he answered. Zena lifted her head.
"I want you here this afternoon, Ethan. You'll have to get the room ready for the new girl. Jotham can take Maddie."
"I'm going to drive her over myself," he repeated in a hard voice. He turned to Maddie. "You be ready at 3, Matt. I've got business in Corbury." With those words, he left the house. He could feel the hot blood beating in his head as the anger burned inside him. He hurried through his work, then went to get the horse and sleigh. He remembered the day when he had got the sleigh ready in order to fetch his wife's cousin from the station. It was little more than a year ago, on a soft afternoon just like this, with a whisper of spring in the air. And all the days between then and now came back to him, one by one. He jumped into the sleigh and drove up to the house. The kitchen was empty, and Maddie's case and coat lay ready by the door. After a moment, he heard someone moving about in his study room. He pushed open the door and saw Maddie standing by the table.
"What are you doing in there, Matt?"
"Just looking around," she replied.
"Where's Zena?"
"Gone upstairs. She said she had her pains again."
"Didn't she say goodbye?"
"No, that was all she said."
They went back into the kitchen. Ethan looked slowly around the room, thinking, "In a few hours, I shall return here alone. I'm looking at Maddie here for the last time." He could not believe it. It all seemed so unreal.
"Come on," he said, opening the door.
He helped her into the sleigh, and with a "go along" to the horse, they started off down the hill. We got lots of time for a good ride, Matt, he said, taking her hand in his. As they left the farm, he did not take the road toward Starkfield, but turned the horse to the right, up the Bettsbridge Road. Mattie did not seem surprised. Are you going round by Shadow Pond? You knew, didn't you? He laughed. The road took them down into a wood, where the trees shone reddish in the afternoon sun, leaving soft blue shadows on the untouched snow. There was a warm stillness in the wood. In the middle was a small icy pond, with sweet-smelling trees all around. It was a quiet, secret place, like the quiet sadness in Ethan's heart. They saw a fallen tree by the icy water, half covered in snow. It was where they had sat once last August, together with a group of young people from Starkfield Church. They sat down now in the same place and remembered those few happy moments from that hot summer afternoon. Ethan looked at Mattie's hair and wished he could touch it again. He wanted to tell her that it smelled of the woods in springtime, but he had never learned to say things like that. When the sun began to go down behind the hill, Mattie said, "We mustn't stay here any longer." As they drove back toward Starkfield, the sky was turning gray, with a cold red over the western hills. "Matt," Ethan said at last, "what'll you do? Can't you ask your father's family for help?" "I don't want to ask them," she replied. Then, after a moment, added, "I guess I'll find something." "You know I'd do anything for you." "Yes, I know. But I can't." She was silent, but he felt her shoulder shaking. "Oh, Matt," he cried. "I wish..." She turned to him. "Ethan, I found this." She held out a piece of paper. It was the unfinished letter to his wife, which he had forgotten to destroy. A painful happiness ran through him. Were Mattie's dreams the same as his? He had to know. "Do you feel like that too, Matt? Tell me, Matt, tell me." "Oh, Ethan, what does it matter now?" she cried. With a sudden movement, she tore the letter into pieces and threw them onto the snow. For a moment, she was silent, then said in a low voice, "The first time I thought of you like that was at Shadow Pond. Then I often used to think about you on summer nights when the moon was too bright and I couldn't sleep." Her words filled Ethan's heart with sweetness. Darkness began to fall, and they drove on in silence for a while. "I'm fastened hand and foot, Matt. There isn't a thing I can do," he began again.
"You must write to me sometimes, Ethan."
"Oh, what can writing do? I want to put my hand out and touch you. I want to take care of you. I want to be there when you're sick and when you're lonely."
"Oh, Ethan, I wish I was dead," she cried.
"Don't let's talk that way," he whispered. As they arrived in Starkfield, a sleigh with bells passed them. They heard happy children's voices and saw a group of village boys with sleds. They drove on to the top of the Corbury Road. On one side was the tall, white shape of the church. On the other were the dark shadows of the Varnum trees. The steep slope lay empty and white below them. An idea came to Ethan to help himself and her through their miserable last hour. He turned to Maddie. "We never went coasting last night. Shall we go down now? How would you like that?"
"There isn't time."
"There's as much time as we want," he said. "The hired girl can wait. Look, someone's left a sled under the trees." He helped her out of the sleigh and took her by the hand towards the sled. They both sat down on it, with Maddie in front and Ethan behind.
"It's so dark, Ethan. Are you sure you can see?"
"Oh, I can do this with my eyes closed," he laughed. She laughed with him. Then, after a moment, he cried, "Now!" They started off, and soon the sled was flying down the slope, round the corner by the big tree, and down the second slope. They came to a stop, picked up the sled, and began to climb up the hill again.
"It was wonderful," laughed Maddie.
"Weren't you afraid when we went round the tree?"
"I'm never afraid with you," she replied.
A deep silence seemed to fall from the starless sky. At each step of their climb, Ethan said to himself, "It's the last time we'll ever walk together." When they reached the Varnum trees, Ethan put back the sled. "I guess this must be Ned Hale's sled," he said.
"Is this where Ned and Ruth kissed each other?" Maddie whispered, throwing her arms round Ethan. Her lips found his, and Ethan held her close to him.
"Goodbye, goodbye," she said in a shaking voice, and kissed him again.
"Matt, I can't let you go. What'll we do? What'll we do?" They stood holding hands like children. Through the stillness, they heard the church clock.
"Oh, Ethan, it's already 5 o'clock. It's time."
"Time for what? I'm not leaving you now. How can we go anywhere without each other after this?" Suddenly, she threw her arms round his neck again.
"Ethan, Ethan, I want you to take me down again."
"Down where?"
"Down there, into the tree, to finish it all. Then we'll never have to leave each other again."
"Matt, what are you saying? Are you crazy?"
"No, but I will be crazy if I leave you. Where'll I go without you? You're the only person who's ever been good to me. And there'll be a strange girl sleeping in my bed, where I used to lie at night and think of you."
Her words were like pieces torn from his heart. Now, at last, he knew that Maddie's feelings were as strong as his. How could he go back to that hated house, to the woman who was waiting for him there? He held her close and kissed her. But when her face touched his, it was cold and wet with tears. He saw the road down to the station, and through the still air, he heard a train. The dark trees covered them in blackness and silence, like a grave. Perhaps it'll be like this, he thought. After this, I won't feel anything.
Come, she whispered, pulling at his hand.
He picked the sled up, and they took their places on it. This time, he made her sit behind him. She put her arms round him, and he turned his head and kissed her. She was right. This was better than being apart. Just as they started, he heard his horse whinny. First came the steep drop, and they seemed to be flying through the air, high up into the cloudy night. Then Ethan saw the big tree at the corner of the road, and he said between his teeth, "We can do it. I know we can do it." As they flew towards the tree, Maddie held him closer, and he seemed to feel her heart beating. The tree became bigger and nearer. "It's waiting for us. It knows," he thought. But suddenly, his wife's face, grim and twisted, appeared before him, and he moved to push the picture away. There was a last moment when the air shot past him like millions of burning stars. And then, the tree. The sky was still cloudy, but when he looked straight up, he saw a single star. What was its name? He used to know, but he couldn't remember. He felt so tired. Through the deep stillness, he heard a little animal making a small, frightened sound. He knew the animal was in terrible pain. He could feel its pain shooting through his own body. He reached out his left arm to help the poor animal and felt something soft under his hand. He tried to move but could not, because there was a rock or some heavy thing lying on him. Then he realized that his hand was on Maddie's face, and the sound was coming from her lips. He put his face next to hers, and in the darkness, he saw her eyes open and heard her say his name.
"Oh, Matt, I thought we'd done it," he whispered.
And far away, up the hill, he heard the horse whinny and thought,
"I ought to give him his supper."